This podcast is part of the Cannabis Media Collective. To enjoy all of the podcasts within the collective, just go to your favorite streaming app or site and subscribe to the Cannabis Media Collective. For more info, check out distinctmedia.ca.
Hey guys, welcome to the Cannabis Update Podcast. We give leaders and organizations an opportunity to tell their stories and share information. No matter what your interest or your involvement is in the cannabis industry, you'd probably agree that starting up a craft cannabis facility would seem like an insurmountable challenge, while at the same time, extremely important if you care about the way things are going. I spoke with entrepreneur and co-founder of Parkland Cannabis, Kylie Beaudry, at Hempfest last weekend, who talked about her experience and challenges of getting her craft grow up and running. Now, Kylie's great, so we added a little bit of fun chit-chat at the end as well. I hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to the podcast, Kylie.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
It's about time.
I would say so.
We've been trying to work something out for over a year now, we've been saying.
Yeah.
And now finally at Hempfest, the second Hempfest we've met each other at.
Yeah.
We're doing it. Incidentally.
And now,
go ahead.
We could talk about how much things have changed.
Yeah, that's true.
And how much they haven't.
This hasn't changed. You can still get alcohol here, but you can't consume cannabis openly.
No, not openly.
But I can buy a beer. Anyway. So, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming. Start off by telling us something about yourself that has nothing to do with cannabis. My favorite question.
Oh, right. I knew you had this question.
Mm-hmm. I throw that
out
there
all the
time.
I've had a whole year to think about it.
Some people have a really tough time with it.
It's such a great question.
Yeah.
Well, I have been snowboarding since I was 12.
Okay.
I did not get out very much last year, so that's one of my goals this year is as soon as the snow flies, which seems it's going to be much sooner. Many of us had
hoped. Yeah, what a terrible, terrible fall we're having.
Right.
Oh, it's embarrassing.
Oh, and the wet summer we've had, the poor farmers.
Yeah.
But snowboarding, definitely. I would, if I had had a bucket list thing, it would be to snowboard in a border cross race.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us about what you do and how you're in the cannabis space.
I do a lot of different things, from education to, you know, being a business owner. I think a lot of people are, this industry is 11 months old for the recreational side,
yeah.
Where micro-cultivations became legal mm-hmm. on October 17th. And so myself and two friends got together and we formed a corporation, Parkland Flower Inc., and
yeah.
We are applicants for a micro-cultivation. So our goal is to be one of the top 10 to get licensed in Alberta. So there's a few people in the queue that I know of.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to see those come on board.
Seems like a big hill to climb right now, though, to open up and launch a microcultivator.
It is a massive...
Is that understatement of the year?
Yeah. I've been working on regulatory, like just getting bylaws changed.
Yeah.
You know, we had like spent all the first part of this year just getting a land use bylaw amendment to happen so that the county would open up for cannabis production in industrial park areas where you have three-phase power, access to water, like other utilities. Finding that in rural Alberta in some of the farmlands where
yeah.
they did have it zoned because it's an agricultural product. Well,
yeah.
When you're growing recreational medical grade cannabis indoor, you need sufficient utilities. And so that was your first challenge.
What inspired you to do this? Is it all about business or is it other reasons why you're doing this?
Oh, there's a multitude of reasons. Back in 2012, my father-in-law was diagnosed with glioblastoma. He had four brain tumors. He had a couple of them removed surgically. And we talked to the oncologist and asked about utilizing cannabinoid therapy as a way to manage some of his symptoms. He was already in palliative care.
Oh.
So it was a really tough time. And his oncologist didn't know enough about it and wouldn't recommend anything. And so we just did it on our own, made him oils and things like that.
So what were you treating specifically?
We were treating nausea, appetite. He got really sick you know, he lost all his hair with the radiation.
Yeah.
Also just to make them comfortable, like it's a painful procedure. When you get your brain operated on, there's a lot of healing that comes from that, and you don't know what person is going to come out on the other side when they go in for that surgery.
Yeah, no
there's,
doubt.
You're warned beforehand of, you know, how they could change. You don't really know when you're messing around in someone's brain. And so, you know, we were just trying to help him bounce back from that. Like, there's a lot of swelling as well, and cannabis is an amazing anti-emetic. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's kind of...
So was that a lot of trial and error back then? I imagine there wasn't a lot of research or knowledge about
it. There was, you know, how to make some things, like Rick Simpson's oil. Like, there were quite a few recipes readily available that you could find online. We Google a lot. We talked to people that have treated family members. I started going to the University of Alberta Library. You know, they have a medical library there where I can access all different research journals and was able to look up a lot of information. So... Yeah, it's that's kind of how we started, and started making other products with a few other people, and dabbled in topicals and things like that.
Tinkering,
and, yeah, tinkering, dabbling, and started a meta grower.
So, without giving me information, maybe that you are not allowed to share from a business perspective, where are you at then? Like, you had alluded to getting permits and dealing with the city or the county.
Mm-hmm.
How far along are you guys to actually getting a license and growing and creating product?
I am 2 weeks away from having my facility fully built out with all my equipment inside and ready to go. I pour my floors. That's the last step that I need to do before I do my evidence package. So I have my application is completely filled out. I'm going to have a hit send party.
You're going to have a hit send party?
Yeah, a hit send. Yeah.
Oh, hit send party.
Yeah,
I get it.
Hit, yeah, a hit send, right? Oh. So I'm just going to have a big party where I hit send.
So this is like the cart before the horse scenario with getting your license. You have to have your facility first.
Yes.
So,
and then they could delay and delay and delay if you don't have all your T's crossed and your I's dotted.
Tell me how you're able to actually accomplish this.
I am partially self-financed, and then I also took on another investor that had a construction company.
Yeah.
I do have a lot of access to resources in our area. I come from an oil and gas background, so I've worked with a lot of contractors and built relationships and you know, getting really good, solid pricing on good work. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. Like, we've done a lot of work in 10 days.
Okay.
And we've done a lot of sweat equity ourselves. We've done a lot of work ourselves. We've been painting. We've been putting up our own paneling. We've been installing our own HVAC. We've been outfitting our own grow rooms. Like, so we're doing a lot of stuff ourselves.
Two things. I hate to ask what your grow space will be, because it doesn't really mean anything at the end of the day if you don't have a good product. You know, people are like, oh, I have a million square feet of grow space, some of the larger LPs. Right.
Yeah.
But then when you go to a retail outlet and you buy their cannabis, you're like, eh.
Yeah.
Right. So what does a large grow space mean? But just out of curiosity, like, what capacity are you trying to grow?
Well, there is a cap on a micro cultivation license.
Okay.
So you cannot grow
the hockey arena thing.
Yeah, you cannot grow any more than 200 square meters of canopy. So that's not a ton. It's not a lot, but it is a substantial amount for a small business.
Right.
Like that's a lot of work.
So you have
anybody who's grown, like even just taking care of four plants, it's a job.
How do you determine what strains you're going to grow?
First of all, we grew out a lot of phenos. We've been growing those out through ACMPR. We're designated growers for some medical patients.
Yeah.
So we're able to basically help them while we're able to conduct data and research. So we did a lot of pheno hunting, and we've got it narrowed down to a couple. One is a pheno that came out of the U.S. It's called Fruity Pebbles. Of course, I'm not going to be allowed to call it that when we go on the legal market due to trademark reasons.
Yeah.
But that one is, it just has a beautiful terpene profile. It lit up like a Christmas tree when the C of A came back. Sorry, that's a certificate of analysis.
Thank you for that.
It had a nice cannabinoid profile in the THC. It was about 19.5%. Now, that was from a one test. Of course, there will be a range.
Sorry, who does your testing? Is it Keystone?
Keystone.
It is.
Keystone Labs, Jody and Steph and Rod, their team are amazing, and they're great to work with. And
I've always got a question waiting on the tip of my tongue, but I don't want to cut you off.
Yeah.
Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Devil's advocate.
Okay.
Bruce Linton was recently quoted as saying that anyone getting into the cannabis game at this point is too late. How do you respond to that?
I disagree. If you look at the alcohol industry has been around for 130 years, right, past prohibition. Okay. And you've got some major players, the Heinekens, the Labatts, the Molson, the Coors. And then you've got small craft brewers that are making a great living. They're making a great product. They're making an artisanal product that people want. And they want, you know, everything is about the experience these days. It's all about, you know, it's not just about what you're drinking or how much it costs. It's about who made it, what were the ingredients that were put into it, how much care and attention goes into that. And they want to know that it was made in their backyard.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really important. And I think that's where craft growers come into play. I think the restrictions on, you know, who can get through a security clearance due to some past transgressions, can't get into the legal space or can't get into an LP when they have more experience.
Yeah.
I think that's a tragedy in our industry. And so I think those people are going to start coming online. I think there's going to be people that are working hard to advocate for those rights and getting those into the economic space and bringing that human talent, that human capital.
Yeah.
We have a lot of it. And you know, we really want to, as a company, I want to see more of that come online.
You've also started a cooperative. Can you talk about that a little bit, why you're doing it, who's involved, and what you hope to accomplish with it?
Yeah, so I formed the association. It's called the Alberta Cannabis Micro License Association, and our whole mission is to, our vision is to be the voice of craft cannabis in Alberta.
Yeah.
And it's just to, it's helped to help bring together all these small business owners, because there is, the thing is, we all look at the cannabis sector as now it's legal and now industry starts. Well, industry was here in the form of smaller players, you know. And yes, there is the organized crime side of things. I understand that.
Of course.
But there's a whole cohort of people that are growing and cultivating and making products to help people.
Okay.
And so I think that bringing them together in an association like this, we're very small fish in a really, really, really big pond.
Yeah,
and so if we swim together as a school, you know, we can get a lot more done. So, you know, it's about even just sharing resources, helping to reduce our costs. We have a cap on what we can produce in a square footage.
Yeah.
And if we, so we can't increase our yields as such, but we can reduce our costs, and collectively we can do that. And so I invite any potential micro cultivation applicant or a micro processor, or a nursery. That's another one, another great business that I know a lot of people in the space are getting into. So, you know, you can feed those home growers who want to grow their four plants, and they don't want to start them from seed, so they can get clones. And you can, you know, and these smaller craft producers can start giving, selling clones to larger LPs and getting those genetics out there, because we're not going to be able to feed the whole market. Like everybody has to help, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's just getting those rights out there, and it's so new. Everything's so new, and we're here to set the stage. So let's do it right.
Yeah. Like the craft beer and I guess small batch winery operations. Do you think that the stuff that you guys produce will kind of remain local?
I would love that. We do have offers from other licensed producers in other provinces, because they're all looking.
Okay.
You know, and it's kind of a race to see who's going to come online.
Yeah.
I would love to. It's hard. We're basically wholesaling, right? We have to sell. We're not going to do a processing license, so we're going to sell at a wholesale rate that cuts into our margins. So we want to work with someone who's going to be fair. And that's another thing, that role that we as an association play, is is making sure that these bigger players are treating these smaller players fairly in this market. I know that cannabis is going to be commoditized, but when you have a small, like a craft artisanal product, that's not a commodity.
No.
That's a gift. That's a, you know, that's an experience. So I think we just need to respect that and respect where this industry came from.
You're not the only cooperative in Canada. There are others.
There's lots.
Are you keeping in touch with people? Are you guys sharing information? Is there like a private Facebook group of
cooperative presidents? Anything?
There's a few. Yeah, I've met with the leaders of the craft cannabis out in BC.
Yeah.
I keep in touch with the BCICA and then the. There's a few. There's a lot in BC. BC's great.
Of course.
They have to.
Yeah.
They have almost 6,000 people, like grow, like small cultivation,
small
facilities that would be considered under this license.
Yeah.
And why are they not licensed? It's a tragedy.
So it's a real requirement.
The lost opportunity that province has experienced, and when you have such a sustainable product that is. Wanted, right? That there is a demand for it. And it's an absolute tragedy that these communities are not feeling the economic benefit of that.
Well, and I think that if you guys don't exist, then all that we're going to end up getting as consumers is the Coors Light and Molson Canadians of cannabis.
Yeah.
Really, there's
Walmart
not going to be...
Walmart weed,
I guess so. All right.
But I can't say that about all licensed producers.
No,
there
no.
are some producers out there that are creating some fire. There really are, you know, and I'm excited to see, you know, trying to do this at an industrial scale, it's a hard road.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, like trying to scale something that, you know, it's an ag business, there's risk and, you know, crop loss and things like that. I think it's great that younger, smaller players are getting into the market space now.
Maybe in the next year or two, we may experience a little bit of a shakeout with some of the larger, more known grower names, without mentioning any names. But that's my guess, is that some of them are going to get absorbed or they're going to disappear entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe that'll open the door for the craft, for the co-ops to kind of come in and fill that space, which I think will be greatly needed.
Oh, absolutely.
Quite honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, if you even look at the wine industry and whatnot, there's only a few processing, you know, there's only a few wineries. Like, not every single vineyard has a vintner on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So what happens is all the other acres around it that are still a vineyard are growing. They're all feeding the one processing plant because they have capacity, but they don't want to do all of the work of growing. So it's much easier to get a lot of small farmers together and grow that together, grow the same crop.
Yeah.
Everybody do a monocrop, and then, you know, you're able to increase your production, or you do a blend. You know, you do a real nice artisanal blend. I can see that coming down the line when you have certain cultivars that are specific that, you know, Albertans really love these two cultivars. We're gonna do a blend and a collab between these two micro-cultivations.
You could end up seeing regional trends like that too, right?
Yeah, you can absolutely.
Same way you get
people,
that with wine.
You know, people, like growers that are growing stuff at home, the licensed producers are watching that. They're seeing what people are talking about on the market. They want to bring that on board. And there's an opportunity to do that with this micro-cultivation license. We have this declaration of genetics. So, you know, you're going to see some really neat things come out when a lot more craft producers get on the market.
Kind of like, you know, the big chicken facilities we've all seen on TV that are really gross. And then you get, like, the free-range chicken and the meat's just better. And
like
it's
taken care of
on a small scale.
I have this awesome organic farm that I get all my peas and carrots from. Like, they have the best peas. They grow these Nantes carrots, like, and they're just phenomenal. They're certified organic. They use, you know, sustainable, no-till, regenerative practices, and they treat their soil well, and they care for it, and they therefore produce a beautiful product, and it's out my back door. It's like a 5-minute drive. So, you know, it's stuff like that. That's what we want to see, you know, on a small scale, like slow farming, slow cannabis.
Yeah. Okay. Changing subject slightly here.
Totally.
I clearly had chapped looking lips when you came over here because you gave me a container of chapstick.
It's
Parkland
lip
flower, lip balm?
It's a lip balm.
Is that different than chapstick?
Well, chapstick is a brand. So it's like saying Kleenex and tissue, right? So here, that's a little bit of marketing.
So what's going on with this? Tell me the story behind that.
So that lip balm, I have a friend that that makes a line of personal care products. And I had her make, these are my business cards. And so we've talked about a lot of things. We've talked a lot about doing some different products and formulations. And, you know, one of the reasons we're growing is to start searching for phenos that are really great for skincare and, you know, treating chapped lips, suppository products.
It works, by the way.
I
can't speak for the suppository products.
Yeah.
The lip balm works.
Well, Jackie Childs was just up on stage talking about suppositories. It was great. I love this conversation. Shout out to also to Reefer Medness and Kirk and Trevor over there when they talk about suppositories. I love it. That's a great conversation.
Last thing, you were in town this morning at a conference, you had said.
Yes.
Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah. I was personally invited to go to this Canadian Chamber of Commerce roundtable discussion about cannabis.
Okay.
And so they're going coast to coast, basically, to all the major cities. They did Vancouver, they did Regina, Calgary and Edmonton, Winnipeg, Toronto. And they basically brought in all the industry leaders, mainly from government, government relations liaisons, from all different sectors of the cannabis sector. You know, it's interesting. There was people that were not even in cannabis that were in there. A lot of academics. It was interesting. I got to go to both. And what the purpose was to discuss how we approach the federal government to look at the economic value that cannabis, the sector, brings to the Canadian economy and how we are slowly very much losing our first adopter traction that we have built and how we need to speed up the process, you know, getting more people licensed and trying to widen up our market.
Okay. And you attended one in Edmonton
and
Calgary.
Yeah. And they talked about like lots of different things about, you know, removing the excise tax from medical, also how that there's three different levels of government and they all have different rules and it's, you know, we have 13 different systems for retail.
Well,
like across
in defense of that, though, I think when you're approaching a brand new industry, it's not a bad idea to try different things because I think that some of
that's
the provinces
actually good. It's
are
a big
to...
social experiment, you know, but I think we need to get faster and better on the moving. Like the cannabis, anybody who works in the cannabis space knows that, you know, 5 days like is like 5 hours.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and like it's just things change so rapidly. And government's not keeping up with that. Mm-hmm. And so when you're seeing something that's working and you're seeing something that's not working, like I think the policy needs to be a little bit more flexible with it.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's government. That is the reason there's checks and balances. We do have a great regulatory framework that we can step down.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think industry is saying, look, you've handcuffed us to really going outside of the box of the realm of what we're doing. Like, you know, spending a lot of money and there's a lot of lost opportunity.
I'm not sure if this is the way that it works in the alcohol industry because, you know, like it or not, there's so many parallels that are drawn between cannabis and alcohol. But I always feel like that sort of middle step of having to purchase from the government for retail is kind of a killer in the industry too. Like until we can actually go directly to a grower, bring their product in. I mean, the grower is going to be Health Canada certified and inspected and all of that packaging. Everything will be, you know, tip-top. I feel like if you know, Joe Retail Guy can reach out to you guys and say, hey, we love your stuff. Everybody in town likes it. Can we just order from you? I think that'll really enhance the industry as well. May never happen.
Yeah. Or even just, or even license central distribution channels as well.
Something like,
you know, I know we have the AGLC here in Alberta and it works for alcohol and, you know, but for a small producer, you know, you're adding in that extra cost of shipping and that middle person and
double the tax, and it
increases your costs substantially.
Yeah. And, you know, I dug around the website briefly upon legalization and I've never ordered anything from it. For one thing, I don't want to wait a day or two. I know it's pretty quick.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, it's just nice to see people and talk to them and
imagine,
smell things.
Yeah.
And,
but then being a medical patient and waiting 5 or 6 days.
Yeah.
You know, if you live in somewhere that's very rural and you're waiting on Canada Post to show up with your medicine.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
That stuff should be behind a counter at a pharmacy.
If you're going for medical, 100%.
That's another problem we talked about. That's, you know, that's something that we discussed, because when it comes to taking medications and any contraindications with other medications, people don't want to go to a cannabis-specific clinic sometimes because they're like, oh, I'm afraid someone might see me, or I'm afraid my work might find out, or it might be on some record, or, you know, and it's like because of their employment
that's
or because
stigma.
Of a job or whatever, right? And so that's really tough to break through that.
Yeah.
When you make it so that you can't, when you make it so it's not normal. Like it's not a nor, it's a medicine.
Yeah.
So why is it not being treated as a medicine? Why is it not in a pharmacy? You know, so that's on that side of things. And then for industry wise, Health Canada is not there to improve the economy. That's not their mandate.
Of course it's not their mandate. Yeah.
Their mandate is to protect the safety of Canadians.
Thank God for them.
And the health and safety. And so they had to be prudent. They had to be conservative, and that's okay. But what we've seen and what we've learned is that the sky didn't fall. Everyone's still here. They're a little happier.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little more relaxed.
Yeah.
They're sleeping better.
I think the world's a better place.
They don't ache as much.
No, absolutely.
You know, and it's interesting. So, you know, I think it will dial back soon, but well, not soon, but it's groups like this that are continuing to work to that. Although I will say one thing is that sometimes the wording and the words we use, you know, I always use the word cannabis.
That's
the Latin name of it, cannabis sativa.
Sure.
I like that, you know, but I find that there tends to be a lot of combative words as well used. Even just one line here saying, we're continuing to tackle illegal cannabis operations. And I, you know, the whole purpose of the microcultivation license was to transition
legitimize
those medical growers. They're growing legally.
Yeah.
A lot of them have been growing legally since 2001.
Yeah.
They're already legitimate.
Yeah. You know, when I started,
why can't we just legitimize them a little more?
Yeah, like, of course.
Right?
Make it, yeah. Of course. When I started this podcast, I was really concerned about being politically correct, and I said cannabis all the time. Only cannabis.
Yeah.
I call it weed. I always have.
I like weed, too. I like weed.
I smoke weed.
I know.
And I'm kind of going back to it, and I'm
pot.
Like, I don't care
I like
anymore.
Pot. I like pot as well. That was a big one.
I'm fine with cannabis.
But I like all the new stuff, too, like and all the old stuff, like hash.
Sure, whatever.
Right? All that kind of stuff.
And that's
a product. That's a value add, right?
Yeah. So, I throw weed in all the time now when I talk to people, because I'm like, forget it. Like, we're trying so hard to be politically correct.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's not important, but at the same time, it is still the same thing that I've always enjoyed, and I've always called it weed with my friends.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Whatever.
Yeah, and also that the word, the black market was used, like at least 6 to 7 times in this meeting, and that told me that that was not a thought.
Right.
Like, you know, we're
not
look
using
at
the term legacy, are they?
The legacy market. You know,
the
I don't want to
market.
Put a color on it even, to be honest. The white, the gray, the silver. Like, it was the the advocacy market. Whatever it is, just transition them.
You
transition
know,
them into this legal space.
Like, I had this conversation with Andrew Friedman, my last podcast, and I said, but the truth is that there are some bad elements in the former
100%.
Illegal market. There's, so, I mean, by definition, yes, I guess they could be black market people, you know, out to make money at anyone's
absolutely
expense.
It is, but...
But not everyone.
Not everyone.
Many good people.
You got a lot of parents
medicine.
That grew for their kids and then found out that they had a talent.
Yeah.
You know? You have people that grew for family members or grew for community members, and they learned how much they loved to grow or how much they loved to formulate a tincture or loved how they made a gummy, like a gummy candy. You know, so... and they're good at it. And they make they make a fantastic product. You know, and so, you know,
they're not gangsters.
Exactly.
I do something. I'm going to completely do a 180 here. I do something oftentimes with some of the fun people that I enjoy interviewing. It's usually called 10 quick questions that require 10 quick answers.
Okay.
But I don't have them written down tonight. So I'm going to give you 5 because I think I have the mental capacity to come up with 5 on the spot. 10, I might stump myself.
Okay.
So are you ready?
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Tell me about the first time you smoked cannabis or consumed cannabis.
I was 15 and I actually didn't smoke it like as in like cannabis like like flour. It was hash oil, and we put it on a paper, mm-hmm. and we put tobacco in it. We rolled that up and we smoked it.
Was that a good experience? Or
yeah, it was great. But like, I mean, it was. I had no idea what it was, but it tasted okay. It was a really well made hash oil.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is your worst cannabis experience?
I wouldn't say it was a bad experience. I have one where I did a dab, and it was a really
strong, big,
out-of-control dab. It probably was a grammar. And I was actually stuffing bags to make rosin, and I said, I really need to sit down. And my friend was like, you're sitting down. And I'm I need to get lower. Like, I need to lie down. So I lit down, and I kind of just waited it out. So that was, holy smokes.
Yeah.
And then they gave me a sandwich, and I had some juice and a glass of water, and I was great.
You got to be careful with those dabs.
Yeah,
I only had my first dab like 2 years ago. A friend was like, here, try this. And I was like, how does it work? And whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, it's powerful.
It's powerful, and it's a very concentrated, and it has a beautiful terpene profile, like especially if it's a rosin or a live rosin. So, you get a really, it's a great experience, but mm-hmm. you do have to, it's like anything. You don't chug on a Mickey of vodka the first time, but I mean, as kids, do you ever remember doing something stupid like that? Like, you snuck something out of your parents' liquor cabinet and you had no idea what to do with it. You didn't know that you had to mix it with something or put it over ice and sip it slowly. You did shots of it like an idiot. People do that. And I think that's where the education comes in.
I remember drinking a bottle of Drambuie when I was about 15 or so.
Oh, yeah. You felt good after that.
No, I did not.
No.
All right, question number 3. That was a long answer, by
Sorry.
No, all good. Tell me one person in the cannabis scene or space that you would recommend we should all follow on social.
Oh my gosh, there are so many.
Mm-hmm.
Well, definitely Jill Pollard from the Herb Life. Yeah. She's doing lots of great things on the scene. Brenda Rassaud, Danielle McInnes, who's going to be speaking here, with you.
Yeah.
Jackie Childs, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm always naming a lot of women.
I was going to say.
I do like what I really appreciate. Tantalus Labs.
Dan Sutton.
Yes, I like a lot of his stuff. Twitter's a great space. I really enjoy Twitter, I have to say. It's almost like real time.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to see, Pancake Nap and What's My Pot and all those guys. Like, man, they know so much.
They share.
It's like, I love how open source cannabis is. Mm. Like, everything's open source.
Yeah.
Like, people used to hold their cards so close, like, especially the bigger LPs.
Yeah.
But now everybody's just so afraid. It's collaboration or something.
Yeah.
That's what people have been, that's the buzzword has been lately.
Collaboration.
You're collaborating, but you're still each other's competition. But we have to work together because we're having so much trouble dealing with the government.
Well, especially the smaller scale people.
It's really cool.
Okay.
So, that's another long answer. I'm
all
really terrible
good.
At this.
Your favorite cannabis-related movie?
Oh, well, Jay and Silent Bob, Dazed and Confused. I know, I have more than that. Those.
You know which one I like?
What?
I never hear it. It's Easy Rider.
Oh.
You ever watch that one?
No.
Oh,
I will
classic.
Now, though. Is it on Netflix?
I don't know. I'm sure you can find
it
online.
I'll find it online.
It's got the ending has a twist. I'll leave it at that. But it's got cannabis in it.
Well, I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah, 60s or 70s. I'm not quite sure. And last question, the most important, and I ask everyone this to end. What's your definition of partying?
My definition of partying?
Yeah.
Oh
you right
gosh.
Now, if
my
you're going to party, a good time, what's
party,
a good time?
Oh, my gosh. Well, obviously, there's going to be a lot of friends in the room.
Okay.
And a lot of cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of great food and lots of good music. And, that's a party to me.
You'd be surprised how many times I hear that answer.
Because that's what always happens after cannabis shows.
Yeah, it's pretty much my answer, too. Any final thoughts? Anything we haven't covered?
I'm so super proud of Alberta as a province and how they kind of took the bull by the horns. I mean, and we're a conservative province.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's kind of neat to see how many people have come out into this space and how much talent we have here. Like, I just love being in this province. I love how open the municipalities have been to cannabis and cannabis production and medical side. So I'm really excited for the things to come for our province and how we can be a role model worldwide and to our neighbors on either side of us.
It's a crazy time, not just
it
in
is.
Canada, but in Alberta as
100%.
Well. And those of us who live here are seeing it and living it.
Yeah, absolutely.
how do we find you online? How do we find out about Parkland Flower?
Well, we do have a landing page. I can't say it's a website because, honestly, I just haven't had time.
Okay, fair.
We're just building out right now. So
Google?
You can go to parklandflower.com. Yeah. You can follow me. It's Kylie Beaudry on Twitter and
you
Instagram.
Are there. Yeah.
My name is spelled different, K-I-E-L-E-Y. So, yeah, I get Keely a lot.
Well, that's why when we started, before I hit record, I was like, can you just confirm how I say your name?
Yeah, I get Keely a lot. But that's okay. That's okay. It is what it is.
So Twitter, Instagram, and your landing page.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's everything. Oh, and LinkedIn, of course. LinkedIn.
Yeah, we're all there, too. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, you're so welcome. This was a pleasure. I'm so glad.
That's about time.
After a full year.
It's about time.
Right?
Right.
Right.
We'll do it again.
We will.
Okay. Once.
100%.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the industry and how much has changed in a year, and that was one thing we were going to do.
Well,
so
we
next
could do
time.
That next time. Let's do it again, for sure.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks to Kylie for joining me at my booth at HempFest, and I hope to see Parkland Flower products on the market here in Alberta very, very soon. Hey, if you like what I do, tell your friends, subscribe, and leave me a review on your favorite streaming app. And if you have a business and you'd like to reach all of my subscribers, reach out to me, michael@distinctmedia.ca. Thanks a lot.
The media contributors within the Cannabis Media Collective do our very best to remain as accurate as possible, but take no responsibility for any inaccurate details or facts. If a story interests you, we're glad to have brought it to your attention, but please take the time to research the details for yourself.